You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host. A chance to see him each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. Doctor, you all set over there?
I am all set. I only had one ear working there for a minute, but we're in good shape. And, you know, I hate to start off this way, but I'm going to anyway.
Shoot.
You know, this tragedy in Paris is really weighing heavily on me. I was just there with my son this spring and watching the French Open. And I've been there many times. It's an incredibly special place with really wonderful people. I know it gets a bad rap sometimes from the American press, but it's not warranted at all. And what happened there is every bit as horrifying as what happened here on 9/11. And I just think we all need to sort of reach out to them and also reach out against intolerance of any kind. So we'll talk about sports today, as we should. That's what this show is for. But boy, I tell you, we really have some extremists out there that are causing some troubles. And this is not everyday Muslims that are doing this. This is extremists, and they're these are not normal folks. And we certainly need to band together as a group and stand up against that.
You know, I didn't know that we're going to talk about this, but I appreciate you bringing it up, because last night, as I'm, you know, watching a high school football game and the Badgers on TV, and I've got my three grandsons hanging out, and I keep going to Fox News or to wherever to watch what's going on. I thought, what are we leaving these boys to? You know, what is it going to be like when they're, you know, when they're my age? And it scares me.
Well, you know, this is something that's happened many times before in the past in the history of the world. It happens all the time. In fact, comes in waves, and you know, in the history, we have stood up against it, and I think good will prevail. It usually does, and but it's just a reminder. You see these people in nightclubs and stadiums, and you think about, you know, we had you know, great football games last night, and we're sitting here and enjoying our wonderful country today. And but it, you know, it's a significant issue that requires cooperation, and I think it's, you know, it's time for everyone who's vested in that to cooperate together to stand up against this. And it's not against Muslims. It's against this extremist behavior.
Yeah, I agree with
and
you.
So anyway, I don't mean to be on a soapbox, but I was literally just there. I just can't imagine our family being in that situation, any of us being in that situation, and how horrific that is. And it's just, you know, cowardly and horrible for people to choose innocent targets like this and do that, I think, is despicable.
So. Yeah. And last question. I can never understand the mindset of somebody like that. Let's just go out and cause all these problems and change people's lives for worse, you know, as many as we can. And then we'll go and watch the news and see, you know, wow, look at how great this was. So
yeah, it's a failure of education. People don't, they're not educated enough to understand that what they're doing is wrong. And that's the fact. They're dogmatic, and they believe that this is the right thing to do, which obviously it is not. And so what we need to do is make sure that people are well educated, so they know that different perspectives can be tolerated and we can discuss them, and we don't need to go shoot each other about
right.
it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Anyway, enough of that. We got to move on.
Yeah, let's get into the show. We're going to start, as we always do, with some injuries. And we normally start with the Packers, but I want to start on the Corey Clement one. He cut his hand yesterday, and it was an incident off campus. And according to the news report, he went to help a security guard that was being assaulted by individuals. And he engaged in a dispute and cut his hand, and they're not saying too much about whether there's a weapon or how bad it is. As he continues to rehab from that sports hernia, now he's got a hand issue he's got to deal with as well.
Well, this is one of those things where you would have to think, based on the reports we've heard, that this is just Corey being a good guy,
right?
And being in a situation where he was trying to do the right thing. And I think, you know, that's what people do. They're not thinking, oh, I have a game. They think, well, this guy's in trouble, I'm going to help him. And, I mean, by the reports, that sounds like what happened, which, you know, is all credit to him. There are bigger things than football, as we've learned this morning.
But, correct.
You know, obviously this is a blow for the team. You know, we had talked about the sports hernia issue a number of weeks ago, and we were skeptical that he would really be ready to go this early. And it doesn't really seem like he is, does it? I mean, he seems to be struggling with this. And those of us who repair soft tissue injuries all the time, which I certainly do, and my partners at Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine do, the body doesn't really heal that rapidly. So I believe what they had tried to do is reinforce the repair with some artificial materials that they thought would hold. And this doctor in Germany's had some success with that in the past, but he's still struggling. And I don't think he's really ready. At least he hasn't been really ready.
It's really, if you went back to listen to that one show that we did, both you and our guest, and I don't remember.
Yeah, it was Dr. Pennington and I were here, and both of us sort of looked at each other like, well, you know, that sounds great, but it's not really, the body doesn't work that way. Your body has to heal. You know, it's not like stitching leather together.
Right.
You know, the leather won't heal. It's like stitching leather together maybe where there's glue involved, and the glue has to cure before it's ready to go. But it takes a certain amount of time for that to occur. So unfortunately, I don't know whether he's really going to be ready to roll. But you know what? If he's not, then hopefully he can get rehabbed and get ready for next year. And maybe he'll be back.
You guys both said, and I don't know if it was on the air or during a break, that he really should strongly consider redshirting.
Yeah, I thought that he should redshirt. I thought that was his best move.
Can he still redshirt this year?
You know,
he played. He played two games already.
Right,
so
I don't
he
believe
can,
that he can.
So I think he kind of wasted that.
He did.
If he had played the beginning of that first game, he may have been able to still get an injury redshirt. But at this point, I think
he's done.
I think he's used the year.
Hey, if you have any questions for Dr. Brian McCarty, you can go on Twitter, #SportsMedRadio, SportsMedRadio. And we'll get those questions answered. Let's go to the Packer injury report if we can. Listening to the Big Show yesterday, all of a sudden the injury report like doubled. And they were like, where did these guys come from? But when you look at it, you know, it talks a little bit about who's, you know, who's got a chance to play and who's probable and who's not. And you look at limited participation with Brian Bulaga, who's got a knee, concussion, or Casey Hayward, who has a concussion, James Jones with a quad, Eddie Lacy with the groin, who's been a huge disappointment for me on my fantasy team, TJ Lang back, and it goes on and on, Clay Matthews and Ty Montgomery, and names that we're used to seeing on this this list. And then it goes down to guys who are full participation, and you're looking at Morgan Burnett with an ankle, he should be back, and Micah Hyde, and this is a game that they need to win.
Oh, yes.
And so when you look at limited participation, there are some key players on that sheet.
Well, I think from my perspective, I mean, I'm a doctor, but I'm a football fan too. My view of this is that the Packers are really banged up. And the reason they were getting destroyed on defense is that half their defense isn't there.
Right.
And, you know, were they a fantastic defense to start with? Well, maybe not. But when you lose your top corner and you lose your top safety, and it just starts to add up. And then the teams can scheme against that and they can destroy you, which is what's been happening. So hopefully that won't happen this week. I mean, they are playing the Lions, but, you know, no game in the NFL is a gimme, as we've learned. And so what I read this morning, it sounded like Hayward was doing pretty well in his concussion protocol. So it sounded like he was probable. It looked like Eddie Lacy was kind of in the questionable category, which is, I think, largely to do with the fact that he also hasn't been very effective. But
right.
It leaves them very thin there. So I think some of these guys are going to be back. Ty Montgomery, I don't think, is going to play. Sam Shields, I'm not convinced, is going to play, despite the fact he was in pads. He's still listed as questionable. And with an AC separation, if he's not able to bring his arms up and effectively combat a receiver, it could be a long day against Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, who's also might not play.
I know.
But when you talk about probable, questionable, and doubtful, if you're on a sheet like this at probable, it's 75% that you're going to play.
Yeah, I'd say at least.
Right.
If you look statistically, almost all the probable guys play.
And then questionable, I think at least 50% or around 50?
Maybe 50%. Yeah, they usually upgrade them on the day of the game. So if they're questionable, oftentimes you'll see them suddenly listed as probable on game day. That means they're going to play.
And doubtful is?
Doubtful means very, very doubtful.
You're probably not playing.
Yeah, questionable is something that, you know, you get that pretty much because they're not participating in practice at a full level. So they have to list them as questionable for that. And but, you know, if you follow these things along, certain types of injuries, when you see questionable, make you a little bit more concerned that they're not going to play. And we have a lot of them.
Right. A lot of them. Hey, pretty excited about today's show.
Yeah.
This is going to be really fun. And this I was a huge fan of this guy.
Well,
still am, actually.
I got to tell you, this is a great honor for us. John Anderson is going to join us. He's a Packer Hall of Famer. He's on the Hall of Fame All-Decade team for the 1980s. And on top of that, he's an unbelievably nice guy and an amazing middle school science teacher.
Is that awesome?
In fact, my daughter's favorite science teacher of all time is
John Anderson.
John Anderson. Yeah.
Well, he's going to join us on the other side. He also went to Waukesha South High School. Went to Michigan, but we'll give him a pass on that, right? We'll give him a pass.
When he went to Michigan, it wasn't a bad move.
Not a bad move for him. Trust me. I agree. And I had him on Faith in the Zone show that I do, and he said, look, that was a pretty decent time to go to Michigan rather than Wisconsin. If it was nowadays, maybe I'd have a different choice, but it was a good move for me. And Wisconsin boys can't come home. He was very happy when he got drafted by the Packers and got to come home. We'll talk to John Anderson about a number of things on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Bumper music this week. At least that song brought to you by Dr. Brian McCarty. Look at these hands.
It's Talking Heads.
Look at these hands. I look at your hands a lot, actually. I told my wife that. I think, wow, those.
Look how steady these are, Mike.
Well, they're shaking a little bit today because they're nervous to be on the radio,
shaking.
I'm sure.
A little too much coffee, probably.
Yeah,
They've never shaken a moment in their lives.
Hey, I'm so excited. Our special guest, the second time in my life, and it's been a privilege to interview him. For Faith in the Zone, and now we get a chance to have him on the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. He is John Anderson. John, thanks a lot for a few minutes of your time. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. It's a real, real privilege.
Did you have you started raking yet, or are you going to get to that after the show?
You know, I've already been to the dump one time this morning, so this is a good break for me. So take your time. I'm in no hurry.
Man, that's awesome. Hey, Dr. McCarty, we wanted to have John on for a number of reasons, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, injuries and things like that. But there's some other issues, I think, that we're going to talk to him about as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, John, you have incredible perspective having played sports all the way through, obviously through college days and then through the pros playing for the Packers for 12 years. We wanted to get your thoughts on how things have changed in your view. What was it like? Was the sports medicine team and the treatment and the diets and all of that when you were playing compared to today?
Well, it didn't really exist even in high school. I mean, we were lifting weights and we were doing some running over the summer, but we were actually encouraged to participate in several sports just because it kept you active, it kept you in condition. I really feel I played football, basketball, and tennis, and this might sound crazy to some people, but I think I was a better football player because I played tennis in the spring. Just the hand-eye coordination, the movements, the different type of competition, and the different type of psychological strength and things that you kind of went through. I do think, in some strange way, it made me an overall better athlete, and that made me a better football player. So I think obviously today the kids are specializing a whole lot more. They're either playing one sport or two, generally at the most. But the three-sport athletes are pretty much gone the way of the dinosaur, and I think that's a little too bad.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that, John. You know, I'm always trying to tell Mike that tennis is the most important sport.
Yeah, well, you know what? Wait till we start doing the high school tennis show, and then I'll talk to you about it.
But but I think your point is well taken. They're different. You know, we know this actually physiologically from the science of how athletes train, that using different types of sports to train your body is actually most effective. And the multi-sport athletes, even today, are actually more successful in general than the single-sport athletes, because you cross-train your neuroanatomy and your musculoskeletal system.
Yeah, and the hard thing is it's hard to quantify that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's you and I can talk about that, and I think I experienced that. But today, I mean, they want the players stronger, bigger, leaner. And so that's all stuff that they can quantify. But can you quantify, you know, how fast you can backpedal, stop, change direction, go to the right, go to the left, those kinds of things? You know, when I was at Michigan, it became much more specialized, and of course in Green Bay. But even in Green Bay, I mean, part of my off-season workout was basketball. I would play in a league over the lunch hour with a bunch of guys over at Carroll College, and we'd go for an hour, hour and a half, and it was great competition. It kept me in great shape. And again, it's a stop and it's a start, and it's. I didn't think of it in terms of really, you know, being like a football workout, but I think it was a complementary kind of a thing to football. Plus, it got me away a little bit from the game, you know. I obviously was lifting, and you got to do that. I mean, that's nonstop. But to counter the lifting and sometimes the tightness that can develop from that, you know, just a game of basketball or to your point, tennis or whatever, sort of does something. And I don't know that I have the understanding of all what happens in the body to be able to specify what specifically happens that way. But I do think it's healthy for kids.
Yeah, I'll tell you, John, there are a couple of things I can fill in some of those gaps for you. One point I wanted to make that I'm just echoing what you just said. You know, we had Bonnie Blair as our special guest, I think just over a year ago, for our sports medicine symposium that we run at Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital. And she talked about how one of her sons is a hockey player and they wanted him to do year round all the time. And when she was growing up, her parents made her hang up her skates for 2 months a year. And every time it happened, she said she was, you know, really upset about it, didn't want to do it. And she didn't know what to do with herself for the first week or so. And then after a week or so, she found herself doing all kinds of other things. And at the end of the 2 months, what she found was that her hunger had returned. She was more hungry to do it than she had been before. She had had a great time doing other things, but psychologically, her hunger for the sport had returned. And I think you're sort of echoing that a little bit. Not only are you training your body in different ways that end up helping you be a better athlete, which I know you really had a reputation for, but also, I think psychologically, you're fresh and kind of eager to get back to the sport. Do you think that's true?
Well, it's funny because I did almost the exact same thing. That after the football season was over, I forced myself to take a month off. Yeah. I wouldn't lift and I wouldn't run. And it was about that time that ESPN was coming along with all these basketball games and stuff. And, of course, having, you know, lived on a regimen for so long where you go to bed early and wake up early and stuff, I would just revel in the fact that I could watch the University of California play Hawaii in men's basketball at 12 o'clock some night. That was sort of my sort of way of just unwinding and getting a little lazy and, yes, even getting a little out of shape.
Yeah.
And at first it was a little uncomfortable. But after a couple of years in the league, I realized, you know what, this is actually allowing my body to rest, to heal mentally. I'm just kind of walking away from it. So that week three came along, week four came along. Now, you know what? Now I had a greater desire to go back in and hit the weights because it was fresh. And you lost some of the edge that you had, you know, but you still have 6 months to get that back. And so that is funny that she would say that, because I kind of went through the exact same thing myself.
Our special guest this week, he is former Green Bay Packer. He was inducted into the Green Bay Packer Hall of Fame in 1996, Waukesha South guy, John Anderson. Hey, John, when you see, like this week and certainly throughout the NFL, the rash of injuries to players, I guess I don't remember back in the day if there was many injuries, or maybe we just didn't know as much about them. Do you feel like there's more injuries nowadays in the NFL than there were when you played?
Well, I don't know for sure. It'd be interesting to get some statistics on that. But I think what has happened for sure is these things are much more public, right? I mean, everybody is wanting to know what's the injury report, on a Wednesday afternoon before a Sunday game, where back in the day, nobody really cared, you know. they hoped that the guys would be healthy, but, you know, there wasn't this day-to-day, holy cow, is so-and-so lineman going to be available, or I heard he's questionable, and it's kind of like, well, either plays or he doesn't. If he doesn't, somebody else will fill the position and we'll move on, you know. So I don't know. Statistically, I don't know if you could even get those numbers at this point. I do think the injuries are they're extensive. I mean, you look around the league. But, again, I think part of that might just be the, you know, the nonstop 24 hours a day.
The coverage, you mean?
Yeah, the coverage of all this stuff. And not just for Green Bay, but we're seeing stuff, you know, for the whole NFL, you know, on the different websites and the sports channels that are specifically devoted to, you know, nonstop football.
Yeah, there is I think to some degree there's a physiological limit too. You know, when I was growing up and, you know, watching you, John, frankly, the USC offensive line was the biggest line in the country. They were as big as the Packers. They were 260 across the front. I mean, that was the biggest line there was. And, you know, now if you're under 300 pounds, you're not going anywhere near the offensive line. And a lot of them are 320, 330 or more. So, you know, the ligaments and the tendons and everything haven't gotten any bigger, you know.
Well, and it becomes a game of physics in some respects.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you put more force or more velocity into something, it's going to hurt more, or you have a tendency to get injured a little bit more. And I think we're seeing some of that. But on the other hand, I think players are probably taking care of themselves a little bit better. They have certainly the availability of the latest and greatest in rehab situations. But as you say, a ligament, you know, once it's stretched, there's not a lot you can do. It's going to take a couple of weeks for that thing to come back. And, you're right a little bit, but on the other hand, you get some of those injuries, it doesn't matter how well you've conditioned. It's just the body says, okay, stop. We're going to put you out of commission for X number of days.
Hey, John, before we get to a break, are you still reffing basketball?
No, you know what? I kind of slipped away from that for a couple different reasons. But I did that for, I don't know, 5-6 years maybe, and enjoyed it. But I think my last, I think a year and a half ago was the last year I did that. So I'm finding other things to do.
That's,
I did enjoy it.
And I'll tell you why that I think it's too bad. Because you reffed a game that I was coaching at Heritage Christian a while back. And I always, as a basketball coach, if the referee is in the correct position and he sells the call, I never say I don't have a word. I've got nothing. It's guys that are, you know, out of position and they blow the whistle and are not sure what they're going to call. John doesn't even remember coaching or reffing a game that I coached in because I had never had a word for him because he was always in the right position. And when he blew the whistle, he sold the call. And I may have thought, what did he see there? But he was in the right position, and he sold the call, so not a word. So
I got that a lot from coaches. What the heck is he calling?
But you know what? But you say you were in the right position, sold the call. So as a guy getting back into coaching, I hope you get back into refereeing. Hey, guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to continue our conversation with John Anderson, former Waukesha South Blackshirt. And
John, during the break, I want you to think about what they told you to eat before the game. I'll tell you why after the break.
That's awesome. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. You know, when you get fired from something and then you get one shot to come back at it, you better come back strong. You two brought to you by Mike McGivern.
Well done,
better
Mike.
Than Barry Manilow, right?
That was way better than Barry Manilow.
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan, I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. You can go to mymosh.com, get any information you need on Dr. Brian or any of the people. Great people at Mosh. If you have any questions for Dr. Brian or our special guest, John Anderson, former Green Bay Packer, you can tweet us at hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll get them answered.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Hey, John, you probably aren't aware of this, but Mike in the first week picked Barry Manilow songs.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, we fired him.
John, I tried to get Doctor songs, and there's a Barry Manilow song that Doctor My Woman is Coming Back, and I got fired for picking any of the music.
Well, Mike, I probably shouldn't mention this either, but I went through a stage where I was a fan of Barry Manilow for a little while, too. I thought to be able to sing and play the piano, what could be better than that, right? So I'm not going to get on you too hard for that.
You know, well, John, you're a way better person than I am.
I love John Anderson. He's in the Mike McGivern Hall of Fame, I'm telling you.
All right, so I asked you to think about what they told you to eat before games. And the reason is we had John McLaughlin on the show a few weeks ago, and he was telling us that an hour before the game, they told him to eat a steak. And he ate a steak every game. About an hour before the game, and I told him if it made me shoot like him, I would have done the same. But so, what was nutrition like when you were playing?
Well, it was quite a bit different, obviously, than it was today. I mean, we used to pack our lunches up in Green Bay, right? And some of the younger players, when I got to be 10, 11, 12 years in the league, you know, I was still eating the same thing. Quite frankly, I was eating junk. I just ate so much. My metabolism was revved up so hard that I don't think it mattered what I ate. Maybe it did. Maybe you disagree. But I'd eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I'd eat potato chips. I'd have burgers. And I had some of my friends who would come in, especially offensive linemen, and they'd have hard-boiled eggs without the yolks. And they'd have meats, you know, that were, you know, super lean. And they wouldn't even think about a burger or a fry or any of that kind of stuff. And they'd look at me like, what are you doing to yourself? And I look at them and like, how can you eat that stuff? So we kind of had this running battle back and forth. Quite frankly, I'm probably not the person to ask about good diet because I was never on one. But pregame, we'd eat pregame meal generally 4.5 hours before kickoff. So if we're kicking it off at 12 o'clock, we'd have a meal at about 7:30. And generally it was steaks. It was scrambled eggs. There were waffles there, juice. And then they had pasta, right? But mm-hmm. I'm thinking, who can eat pasta at 7:30 in the morning? Well, a lot of guys did. I guess it was the carbo thing. But, again, I was kind of like John maybe. We're kind of so at the hip here that I would eat a steak. Not a lot of it. Quite frankly, my stomach was pretty churning up at that point. I didn't eat a whole lot, but I knew I had to get something in my stomach and just settle my system down a little bit.
Yeah, that's really great. Great to hear about what changes have occurred. You know, the reason I brought it up really is I wonder how many games those offensive linemen missed and how many you missed.
Well,
you know,
I don't know. That'd be a good, yeah.
Cause you didn't miss a lot of games. I mean, you had the one season you had the broken arm, right? But other than that,
I had a couple seasons of a broken arm.
Yeah.
But, I excuse that as, you know, that wasn't health related. That
no.
was just, the guy I ran into was a little bigger than I was at that particular point. But no, I didn't miss a lot of, I missed very few games. And I am here again, telling you all my bad stuff here, but I probably was one of the least flexible athletes I know. Okay. I didn't like to stretch. And so consequently I didn't do a good job stretching, but I never ever missed a game because of a pulled muscle. So, you know, it's just kind of some weird stuff going on back then.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. The stretching, you know, has come under fire as an issue that does not prevent injuries, which is very interesting. It seems very counterintuitive. Now, warming up, just for people listening out there, warming up is critical to prevent injuries. So you need to get to that sort of sheen level, which I know you guys do, you know, in pregame. But right. That's actually more important than the stretching. Now, in the longer term, I don't know if flexibility may be helpful. I know I could use a little bit more of it, but in the short term, it doesn't matter. But it's very interesting. You know, nutrition has come a long way. We spend a lot of time on the show with, we have a nutritionist that works with our program, and she's educating us about sort of what fuels you need for various activities. And so there's obviously a lot more understanding. You would know this through your teaching of science also. The you know, it's like putting the right kind of fuel in a vehicle. You have to have the right substrate in order to make the right things. And It's just very interesting that back in the day, and I think a generation before you, they probably paid no attention to it whatsoever.
I remember in high school I poached eggs with toast. Why? Because that's what my brother ate when he was in high school. Right? That was all the theories we needed. What are they saying today, Doctor, about what do you need for a pregame meal? What's the best thing to be doing a couple hours before a contest?
Well, they're big into fueling up about an hour ahead of time and it depends on the sport. So if you're having a sudden burst sport like weightlifting or probably football to that degree, it's much more, bent towards carbs and so forth. Otherwise, proteins are big because you want something that burns longer. So it's actually sport specific. And so one of the things the nutritionists do, which is really cool, is they sort of customize your program for your sport. So people who are interested in that can go to our website at mymosh.com. They can look up sports nutrition. They can learn a lot more about it, a lot more eloquently than I just put it. But it's a big topic, frankly.
And do you know what's interesting, John, the difference? And I started coaching basketball. I coached for 33 years, and we never even knew anything about that. We didn't never talked about it. And then sports nutritionists came and they said, look, you want to get these players to be able to play at the highest level at this time. Here are the steps that you have to do. And it's not just the day of the game. It's, a week prior, especially in football, it's 4 or 5 days prior, making sure you're getting ready for that competition. And it's stuff that we never even talked about back then.
All right. Well, I remember I was in high school 72, 73, and 74 at Waukesha South. And I can remember that was the phase-in of it was okay to have water during practice. I can remember my sophomore and junior year, it was not done. It was, you got to gut it out and you got to get tough. And then all of a sudden this whole new theory came in. No, you got to keep players hydrated.
Yeah.
So I think it was my senior year. All of a sudden we had these water breaks and it was wonderful because obviously everybody was thirsty. But you kind of wonder, what was wrong with last year? We couldn't have water, and now all of a sudden they're pushing it on us. So obviously some changes in ideas and philosophies, and I lived right through it in that one couple of years stretch.
Did they give you guys salt pills? That's what they did at Messmer for us. Salt pills.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of your alma mater, Dave Roush, the head football coach at Waukesha South, just announced his retirement.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, he is a really good man, a really good football guy, and I will miss him. I've gotten a chance to know him a little bit, and he's just a really good football guy, but he's been at South a long time, and decided it was time for him to retire. The game is better when he's in it, so I hope maybe he reconsiders, or maybe I'll get him in studio to talk high school football with us if I can. Guys, we've got to get to our last break. If it's okay, John, we'd like to hold you over for one more segment, and we want to talk a little bit about some things parents and kids that are are doing some playing too much, and are they specialized, and then some advice you might give to parents of young athletes who'd like to ask you about that. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. This song is not played very often on this radio station. I'm just telling you.
Gotta have respect for when,
I guess, that's the Michigan fight song. Our special guest, Michigan grad, but you know what? You can't come home. John Anderson, former Green Bay Packer. He's now out at, he's a teacher.
Yes.
That's awesome. Good teacher.
Well, I have to tell you, before I get in trouble when I go home, my daughter Megan, John, says hello. And she told me if I didn't say hello, I'd be in a lot of trouble. So he's listening to our show right now. So
I appreciate that. She was one of my favorites as well. So I think it's going mutual between her and I. Yeah.
Well, listen, John, thank you again for joining us today. I really wanted to get your take and your advice for parents of young athletes. This is a topic, believe it or not, we talk about on this show very frequently, and something I really wanted to get your take on. So what advice do you give to parents of young athletes today?
Well, I guess, first of all, I would just say there's an overwhelming amount of good stuff that comes out of any participation in sports. The kid stretches himself. He's out there. He's learning about success and how to handle that. He's learning about failure and how to handle that. He's learning that the more you practice, the better you get. You're in a team sport. You're learning the benefits of working with different people. And, you know, it's not all wonderful. I mean, there are some concerns that, you know, kids have, and how do you handle this situation? But you know what? It teaches them responsibility. It teaches, you know, you make a choice and there's a consequence. And so that overall is, I guess, my number one message. If kids or if parents are thinking, you know, should I let my kids play sports? I think there's some tremendous benefits. Beyond that, I think we've almost got the pendulum has swung a little bit too far the other way, though. And we're now having that kid who's at a very young age, and, you know, you're going to put him in this one sport because he likes that the most right at this point. And, you know, we can get him a college scholarship and he can be professional in this or whatever. And that is where things start to break down a little bit. I when you guys were on break, I went and got a sheet that I came up with a couple weeks ago. I was giving a talk to some people, and let me just run this past you. You know, obviously my preference or my priority was always football. And this is 2013. There were 1,086,000 high school kids playing football. So 1.1 million high school kids playing football. Of that, 6.5% played in college. Okay. So that 1,100,000 basically gets down to 70,000. And a good chunk of those are Division III. Okay. Which is great. I've coached at a Division III. I think that's a great place to play football. But I guess my point is there's no scholarships at Division III either. But to go back then, of those 1.1 million kids who play football, the percentage of kids in high school who play professionally is 0.08%. Okay. Wow. And the numbers are similar in every other sport, whether it's girls basketball, men's basketball, baseball, hockey. They're all less than or right around 0.1%. So the reality is, okay, and I tell this to a lot of kids too when I get a chance to go around speak at a number of football camps during the summer. And kids are, you know, I always ask them, how many of you want to play in the NFL? Well, 80% of their hands go up. And that's great. I don't ever want to step on anybody's dreams. I had that dream as a kid myself. So I'm not going to say, well, you know what? Don't make dreams, because they're rarely ever going to come true. But I do tell them, look, the odds are that most of you aren't going to. But here's what you can do. You can continue forward having that dream, but just do it making sure you have your education, because your education is what's going to take you into that next level, whether it's college or beyond. And so you can do both, okay? But don't get into this, you know, closed vision of, you know, all my eggs are in this basket called football or basketball or baseball, because the reality is through injury and attrition and just talent level and everything else, that player is not going to make it to the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball. And then what do? You know, you've not wasted, but you've spent all those years, and what do they have to show for it?
Yeah, so I think you're – you know, go ahead.
Kids have parents, right? That's why kids have parents. And they got to have a realistic view of what is really down the road, parents do, so that they can help in guiding that child and that student eventually into making good decisions for them.
Yeah, I think, boy, you can't get better advice than that. The thing that we always talk about is complementarity. You know, when I see my young athletes, one of the things that it would be helpful to them, I think, is to see what a professional athlete looks like. Because I think oftentimes they don't understand that professional athletes in general don't look like normal people. You know, they don't, right? I mean,
no, I know. There's a, and I say this in a good way. There's a freakishness about a professional athlete, right?
Well, they are
allows them, either physically or mentally or something that allows them to do that. Quite frankly, I think one of the reasons I played for as long as I did was I was willing to tolerate pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not necessarily, you know, just generally pain. My neck was always sore. For 5 months of the year, I had a sore neck, you know? And if, you know, today you would say, well, is that worth it? Well, at the time it was.
Yeah. Okay?
At the time it was. And so you look at players in the NBA. My gosh, they're so gifted. But these guys aren't 5'10 or 6'3. They're 6'8, 6'9 guys who can run, jump, glide. They are not the normal person, to your point, Doctor.
Yeah, that's really true, and I think it would be beneficial to a lot of the youngsters to see that, because I think when I see the professional athletes who I treat, you know, it's very obvious they're not like the rest of us. I mean, you're not like I am. You're bigger, and you can train harder, and you're more athletic from the get-go. But the most important thing, I think, the most important lesson to take away from this is that in the modern world, you really cannot have a career or be employed without an education. And it's really critical for people to have them work together, right? Sports are extracurricular, so do the curricular as well.
Hey, guys, we got to get – did you guys ever play tennis, you and John, against each other?
We have not.
I'm not sure who I would bet on.
We'll play tennis with Barry Manilow in the background.
That's awesome.
That's great.
He is
John, thank you so much for joining us. I hope one day you'll be willing to do this again. It was just fantastic.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I enjoyed it. Thank you, guys.
Hey, guys, thank you. Thank you, John Anderson. Dr. Brian, it's great to see you. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
As well.
You bet. This has been the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.